You are listening to Studio 41.
Hello and welcome to Quiz Time India. This week on the show, we have Yogesh Tolani.
As an analyst, this is a classic test and control scenario. In
so the year was 1846 and we are talking about a doctor called...
As its representation on a poster that was designed by... That is James. A superb and brilliant
wow.
Crack. Well done, Aditya.
So put on your thinking caps and fasten your seatbelts. The show is about to begin. Welcome to Quiz Time India, India's first quizzing and trivia podcast. Did you know 7-Up, the cold drink, was originally called Bib Label Lithiated Lemon Lime Soda? Or did you know the Bank of America was originally called the Bank of Italy? If you like such fizzy and dizzy facts, you have come to the right place, the right podcast, Quiz Time India. Let us get on to some quizzing. First of all, there has been an pending audience question. Adil Aziz was on the show last week and this was his question.
What did Outlook magazine humorously describe as the biggest sex change operation in independent India? What did Outlook magazine humorously describe as the biggest sex change operation in independent India?
And the correct answer was... the renaming of Victoria Terminus in Mumbai to CST Chhatrapati Shivaji Terminus. Continuing with the quizzing bit, this week on the show, we have Yogesh Tolani. Yogesh was born and brought up in Bombay. He works in the analytics space and believes that you need a mix of logical and empirical skills to solve a problem. He's passionate about tabletop games, Indian independent music, and of course, quizzing. Alongside Adil from the previous episode and a few others, he started Quiz Pro Quo back in May 2020 to promote quizzing among those who usually don't quiz. The series has been running every week and will continue to entertain, encourage and enlighten for many years to come. And on that note, welcome to Quiz Time India. Hello Yogesh, welcome to Quiz Time India. Thank you so much for taking out the time on joining us on the podcast. It is an honor and I'm pretty sure it'll be a pleasure. How are you doing, man?
Hey Aditya, thank you so much for having me. Absolutely thrilled to be here and yeah, absolutely, the pleasure is all mine.
Awesome. So Yogesh, we'll get right into it, and for the benefit of our listeners and for you, I'll just quickly rattle off all the rules. The rules are quite simple. Actually, there isn't much to it. We are definitely quizzing, but it is not competitive. It's just you and me. We both have a set of questions ready with us, and we both take turns asking each other these questions. Through the questions, if ever the other person needs any hints, we can provide as many hints as possible. And the entire idea of this exercise, of this episode, of the show, is that by the end of this episode, we both get to learn some new things, some cool things, and also with us, of course, the audience also gets to learn some new things. So, is that clear?
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. So, let me start out with the first question, as is the tradition. Your first question is sort of relevant to our present-day scenario. Shall I start?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so this is a story of a person whose ideas could have spared a lot of lives, but didn't. So the year was 1846, and we are talking about a doctor called Ignaz Semmelweis. So Ignaz Semmelweis is Semmelweis. So, as I said, this was around 1846, so... medicine as a profession had started taking a shape with which we are familiar in today's terms. So not many people believe that bad things or diseases happen because of evil spirits and bad omen. And science was being actually used to figure out why diseases are happening. So there was research happening and people were figuring out anatomy and autopsies were being done. So you can say the medical field as we know it, its foundations of sorts, at least the modern medicine, its foundations of sorts had been laid down and people were working on it. And one of the people who was working on it was Ignaz Semmelweis. Now, the main work he was doing was related to finding the reason behind a large number of deaths of women in maternity wards due to childbed fever. So back then, a lot of women who went under labor who were in these wards ended up not making it. And this is what Ignaz's main line of work was. He sat down to find out why. He compared two maternity wards and concluded that the one which had all male doctors and students as the staff recorded 5 times high mortality rate compared to the one which was staffed by the regular midwives. So he basically took two sets. One was the regular midwives, and then there was another set which was led by all male doctors and students. And the one which was led by the all male doctors and students had a 5-time higher mortality rate. So more women were dying in that set. He tried finding various reasons why could this be the case. And well, basically he couldn't find any, until one day a pathologist who was working with Ignaz fell ill and died too. And it was when Ignaz conducted an autopsy on the pathologist, he found out that the pathologist that he was working with died from the same thing as those women in the maternity wards. So he came up with a hypothesis. He thought the reason why these male doctors and students faced so many deaths in their wards was because these doctors were also doing a lot of autopsies, and they were playing around with a lot of cadavers, and there were different materials and particles that they were coming across. He said, because of something that we could possibly do, maybe we could bring down the mortality rate. And hence, he started his hypothesis, and based on his hypothesis, he came up with the solution, which of course the doctors laughed at him. They didn't want to do this extra chore. But what he suggested actually seemed to work. Even though he made quite a few enemies and lost his job, what he introduced holds great importance. In fact, even in today's world, what was it that Ignaz Semmelweis came up with? Or what did he recommend to save all these deaths that were happening in the maternity wards?
I love the story. It's a great story as well.
Yeah.
And it appeals to me as an analyst, because this is a classic test and control scenario in which you have two groups which ideally should be doing the same thing, but one is an experiment group and the other is, you know, the regular group.
Yes.
You said that the differences between the two were that the male doctors were performing autopsies and trying to diagnose why patients had died. Is that the case?
Yes, they were doing a lot of autopsies, and they were doing other procedures also when they were tending to this maternity ward. Apart from it, they were doing some other things. As I said, autopsies and other intrusive surgeries and things like that.
As compared to the midwives who are only doing the maternity ward work.
Yes.
So my first guess then is that because the maternity or the midwives were only tending to the maternity ward, they did not have as much contact with any contagious, you know, diseases or infections or bacteria.
Great line of thought.
Which the male, the male doctors would have had that.
Yes.
Especially if they were doing autopsies on patients who had died. So they were likely to, like, the patients who had died obviously died from some disease, and by doing autopsies, they were probably coming into more contact with those viruses and bacteria.
Absolutely correct. That is exactly pretty much what Ignaz's line of thought was. Now, go further. So what did he do after this?
So I'm guessing that, you said this is in the 18th century sometime?
Yeah, 1846.
Okay, I assume then that he recommended that the doctors, you know, have scrubs and gloves and masks and, you know, one use and throw masks and gloves and scrubs, which after a procedure you would have to change and, scrub down and then go back in for the next one.
That is a good guess. That's a great guess. You are definitely in the correct
you can say, the line of answering, if that's the phrase. But you are on the right track is what I'll say, but slightly away from the answer, in the ballpark, definitely. Really close.
Did he recommend that the areas where the patients were be sanitized?
Again, very close. So you can see some COVID similarities in here. In fact, when the pandemic began, and on 20th March 2020, he was remembered by a Google Doodle, which was published in accordance with, you know, because of the pandemic which had happened. So you are on the right track. Yes, it is about some sort of sanitation. And you mentioned scrubs in the right track. Then you mentioned sanitizing the place in the right track. But there was something else that he suggested, which caught on.
Along the same line of thought, I'm assuming that he just said that you have to wash your hands and face and generally with soap, and he recommended that 20 seconds for hand wash, those guidelines.
So Ignaz believed that these doctors, when they were treating all these autopsies they were doing, and they were playing around with all these cadavers, he thought that there would be a smell from these cadavers on their hands. And he asked them to wash their hand with chlorine so that they could remove the smell. But eventually they found out that the real benefit lied in actually washing hands. And the doctors really earlier did not like it. They were like, he's just making us do extra work. Now we have to sit and wash our hands after every patient that we see. That is not feasible. That is not how we work. And he got fired. But people, of course, some people went on with it, and slowly they realized that that is the reason why so many deaths were happening in the maternity wards, because people were not washing their hands. Eventually, washing hands became a common practice. And well, in the last 1 year, it's become way more common than common, if that is something that I can call it. But yes, that is the correct answer. Well done. Absolutely correct. Ignaz Semmelweis is the first medical professional or the doctor who recommended washing hands regularly for not getting any infection. And he passed away, as I said, he was around in 1846. So back then, this was new knowledge. But now, of course, it is everywhere you go. You will see probably wash your hands written somewhere on the wall. So well done. That is the correct answer, Yogesh. You were absolutely correct. Well done.
Thank you. And it was a great question.
Now it's your turn to ask me a question. And I'm quite looking forward to this one.
All right. Okay. So my question for you is on the origin of a two-word term. Let's call it XY.
Fair enough.
Now, the origin might be disputed in a sense, but the most common association is with a businessman from New York named Samuel Wilson. Okay, keep the location and the name in mind. Now, in 1812, so, you know, before Edelweiss or Semmelweis, in a war in 1812, Sam Wilson supplied barrels of meat. Now, those barrels of beef were stamped with two letters to indicate that they were government property.
Okay.
Now, those two letters, rather than indicating government property, gave rise to the phrase XY, because they started with the same letters, right? So, the same initials as the phrase. Now, you would have seen XY across pop culture, but most commonly, you would have seen XY as its representation on a poster that was designed by James Montgomery Flagg.
Okay.
So, identify this two-word term.
Okay. So, Mr. Wilson is from America, right?
That is right.
1812 is the approximate timeline you mentioned. And then there was this food supply, basically.
Yeah.
Beef supply, like that was basically meant for food for the war, people who were going on to the frontiers or whatever, right?
Yeah, for the soldiers.
And it was stamped two letters, and then it caught on and it became something else, is what you said. And that thing is relevant in pop culture. Also, just clarification, so whatever the two letters were, is it the same letter? Is it alliterative?
No, it is. It might not be.
Okay. Oh, I thought like maybe like Easter egg or something like that. It might have happened. But of
so
course...
the two letters indicated that it belonged, like those barrels belonged to the government.
Oh, wait. His name is What was his name again?
His name was Samuel Wilson.
Is this the origin of Uncle Sam?
That is a superb and brilliant crack. Well done, Aditya.
That was a fluke. That was a total fluke. I can see that now. Now that I know it's Uncle Sam, I can see it happening. Oh, and the poster, Uncle Sam wants you to join the army. That poster you're talking about.
Exactly, yeah. So Sam Wilson was from New York in America, of course. And so he stamped the barrels with US to indicate that it was US property. But you know, because the soldiers saw US, they said that, okay, this food is being supplied by this, you know, godfather of sorts. We'll call him Uncle Sam, and hence was born.
Uncle Sam. And then the poster came in, Uncle Sam wants you to join the army and things like that.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Today I learned. America is always referred to as Uncle Sam, and I never sort of questioned why this Uncle Sam came into the picture or who that was. T-I-L.
Yeah.
Today I learned.
So this came about, I mean, I came up with this question because I was hosting a quiz called the Easy Quiz, the E to Z quiz. So there were 22 questions in that, each one starting with a subsequent letter of the alphabet. And I was just trying to find something with you and just came across Uncle Sam's origin.
That is great. And with that, we move on to the next question. Admittedly, this next question is, there's not much here to crack, but it is one of those things that I found extremely, what do I say? It's frivolous. It is amazing. It is beautiful in a way. And I thought I'll just share it with you and the audience in form of a question. So, of course, you would have heard of the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Now, there is something called as the Ig Nobel Prize, basically awarded in the same categories as Nobel Prize. And there are some more categories also on the side. So the idea is Ig Nobel, it plays, if you read it quickly, it's ignoble, which means, of course, not noble. And their motto or their aim is to honor achievements that at first make people laugh and then make them think. So these are just some examples. The 2002 Ig Nobel Prize for Mathematics was presented to K.P. Srikumar and G. Nirmalan for estimation of the total surface area in Indian elephants. As you can see, there is no point of this study, like how much total surface area we have in elephants. But that is the research these two did, and hence they got an Ig Nobel Prize in 2002. In 2001, the year before, the Ig Nobel Public Health Prize was awarded to Chittaranjan Andrade and B.S. Srihari for their probing discovery that nose picking is a common activity among adolescents. So this gives you a vibe of what level of research is being done or what playing field are we at. Here comes your question, all right? The Ig Nobel Prize for 2020 was jointly awarded to the governments of India and Pakistan. This was in the news back then. This must have happened in 2018, but the award was given in 2020. Jointly to the Indian and Pakistani governments. You have to tell me, what was the reason behind India and Pakistan together being given this Ig Nobel Peace Prize?
You said Peace Prize, right?
Yes. 2020, they got the award. 2018 is when something happened which was so bizarre and I said brilliant and beautiful that the Ig Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, went to India-Pakistan. What did India-Pakistan do in 2018?
So I'm assuming that it was not any, you know, formal treaty or anything serious in the in terms of nuclear disarmament or any of that stuff, right?
No, definitely not.
Is this somehow connected to the world of sports?
No, not at all.
Is this, then does this have a Bollywood connection or, you know, the Pakistani film industry connection?
Not even that. Let you have a couple of guesses because there is nothing here you can play with, as I said earlier. But it's just too amazing that this thing has happened.
I'm somehow thinking of the marriage between Sania Mirza and Akhtar. And I'm just thinking that did they have their first kid or something at the time?
Shoaib Malik, no, it's not that. You know what? India-Pakistan have won an Ig Nobel Peace Prize earlier also in 1998. when, of course, if you remember India and Pakistan, when they gave out the award, they gave out the award to Atal Bihari Vajpayee and Nawaz Sharif for, and this is in inverted commas, aggressively peaceful detonations of atomic bombs. So this is not the first time we've won it. But yeah, 2020 was not even at this level. It was something even more, should I say childish? I'll give you a couple of more tries. Otherwise, I'll just give out the answer because it's just too vague otherwise.
Can you give me a hint in what field or area or aspect it will be?
Oh, so basically, the Pakistani embassy in Delhi said they faced harassment. And because of that, the Pakistanis retaliated. And the Indian embassy in Pakistan also faced that kind of harassment. So it went on for a while until they had to be brought to an end.
Hmm. Did they somehow not get the food which they were requesting for or had ordered and hence...
No. Should I give out the answer? I think you're just giving all these logical answers, but these guys are beyond it.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So what the Indians did, the Pakistani embassy was there. At night, they would go and ring the bell and run away. And it kept happening for a long time. So the Pakistani High Commissioner, he relayed it to Pakistan. So that's what Pakistan ended up doing. They went to the Indian High Commissioner's embassy and they rang the bell in the middle of the night, woke up everyone and they ran away. And this went on for a while until, you know, I don't know how sense prevailed in between all of this. But it is commemorated forever with the Ig Nobel Peace Prize for 2020 for both India and Pakistan. For they rang each other's doorbells in the middle of the night and then ran away before anyone had a chance to answer the door. So that is the question and that is the answer. I'm sorry, there wasn't much to play around here with, but I thought it was just too interesting to ignore.
You hear about these prank wars between Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman or George Clooney and Brad Pitt, but it's just,
oh, yeah.
This is another level.
Nuclear warheads are there. There are like 150 crore people on each side of the border. Everyone's lives are being on the line. And what are these guys doing? Ringing the doorbell in the middle of the night and running away.
At least there's some friendliness between the two.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. All right. Now it's your turn to ask the question. Go on.
Have you ever wondered why is everyone and their nana, nani, mama, kaka, mummy, papa, everyone is watching the same shows? One month it is Money Heist, another month it is GOT, then comes MasterChef, then Bridgerton, The Crown, and it keeps going on. See, this is because OTT platforms want you to watch the same shows. Business, hey boss. Discontent is an email newsletter that attempts at breaking this clutter. Handpicked shows, movies, music, podcasts, and reading recommendations just for you for free. Straight to your inbox. Subscribe to Discontent. Link in bio.
Alright, so I'll give you two theories. It's a slightly long story, okay? So I'll give you two theories about the origin of a particular rhyme or song, okay? So the first is that X and Y are said to represent King Louis XVI and his wife Queen Mary Antoinette. Okay, so the couple, King Louis and Queen Mary, were said to be greedy and they carelessly spent all of their money. They invested their life into climbing the social ladder. And so because of that, King Louis XVI was beheaded in 1793. And then, you know, Queen Mary was beheaded around 10 minutes after her husband's death. Okay, so that's the first theory.
Oh, okay.
Now, the second theory is to do with King Charles I. Now, he wanted to raise more money. And, you know, to do that, he proposed that we raise the tax on half-pint measures. Now, half-pint measures in that time were called X. Now, his parliament said, no, we don't want to raise taxes on half-pints. So, he ingeniously came up with a solution to reduce the volume of a half pint. Now, in those days, a half pint, if you look at a beer glass, there is a symbol of a crown somewhere towards the top of it. And that is, that marks the measure of the pint. So what he said is, let's just take that crown down a notch. And hence the volume of a pint will decrease. People will buy more beer. And hence, we'll get more sales and more taxes. So, he lowered the crown a notch managed to get more taxes and never had to raise the percentage of tax. So the same principle was then applied to the quarter pint, which was called Y.
Mm.
So these are two theories as to what X and Y are. And X and Y is the name of a song or a rhyme that we've definitely all heard.
So I heard the first story and I could see some I could see some clues in there. The second one threw me off, to be honest. So you said it was what was the name of the king again?
So the first one were King Louis and Queen Mary.
Yeah, so I think that sounds like a Jack and Jill kind of a thing. And you also mentioned that it was climbing a social ladder, so went up the hill could be an allusion to that. And the king was killed, and then Jill came tumbling after, as you said, she died a few minutes after him. But the second story kind of made me a bit, like, threw me off. So is the second story also about the same rhyme, or is it a different rhyme? I'm confused. If it is...
It is, and I'll stop you there. That is the perfect right answer to it. This is Jack and Jill. In fact, there are several theories as to why, as to how Jack and Jill, you know, what the whole rhyme is about. So one of them is about King Louis and Queen Mary. The other one says that on a pint of beer, the crown indicates the pint measure.
Mm-hmm.
And so King Charles lowered the crown. So lowered the crown.
Okay.
And then after that, the Jill was the quarter pint. And so the Jill followed suit. They did the same thing for the Jill.
That is quite interesting. You know what? Recently itself, I was reading up about these backstories of these poems. And I missed this one. I got Baba Black Sheep. So the story there is that there was Edward I, also known as Edward Longshanks and Hammer of the Scots. He had basically, it was a fabric tax. A third of the tax went to the state, third went to the clergy, and the rest of the material belonged to the farmer, which is why the kid down the lane never got any. And there was another one, which was Ring Around the Rosie. So that was about the 1665 Great Plague of London. And the rosy, which is being spoken about, it was this bad odorous rash that used to develop on the skin of these sufferers of this bubonic plague. And the stench of which was so bad, they had to conceal it with a pocket full of posies, which I'm assuming of some toss of flowers. And it is said this plague killed 15% of Britain's population.
Yeah.
Hence, in the last line, it says we all fall down, and the down is sort of means dead. So we all fall down dead. And there are other ones also. There was Rockabye Baby, which was about the revolution and how baby meant King James II. So quite surprising and nasty history to all these rhymes that we've been reading. And maybe not so much meant for kids. If you know the backstories behind them, how people are being beheaded and how plagues are killing 15% of populations, I don't think our parents would have allowed us to read those things.
Super. All really nice stories, and all of them make for great questions as well.
Absolutely. It's the bread and butter for a quizmaster, right? Once you get into one topic and then it just snowballs into 5-6 questions. All right. So shall I move to the next question?
By all means, yes.
Hey, you seem like a cricket fan. Of course, you know that India is playing Sri Lanka right now, but did you know that England introduced the 100 this week, or that the West Indies are about to take on Pakistan? And did you know that next week Australia will be taking on Bangladesh, and then India would be taking on England? Yeah, and this is just 1 week in the men's game. A bit too much, right? Well, to make things simple, follow the game on Cricket Quota, a newsletter for the Desi cricket fan. Cricket matches, stories, memes, anniversaries of great games and performances, all of it for free straight to your inbox, cricketquota.substack.com. Okay, so the next question is a recent question, that I came to know about. And this was given to us by Vinayak. Vinayak also sets questions for the podcast. So Vinayak gave me this question, and it is something, let me tell you just the basic idea of it. It is something which is quite obvious, which is quite straightforward. But in all my years of existence, I never made the relation. So we go back to ancient Rome here. In contrast to almost every other culture on the planet, the Romans had a 10-month calendar. This is before Julius Caesar. Quite early, Romans had a 10-month calendar. But like every other culture on the planet, their new year started in the month of spring. So if you see basically lunar calendars in India, they basically the new years coincide with spring. And that is what happened in this ancient Rome. They said the year will start in spring and the year will only have 10 months. Now, it wasn't like these 10 months were longer to cover for the full length of the year. They were just normal 30-31 day periods, like how we have today. So what happened to the 2 months which were lost? Basically, the Romans believed the winter was a monthless season. Nothing much happened during that time. It was snow and there was not much vegetation. So what they did, they just added a buffer period of about 50 days at the end of the year each year. Over time, people sort of grew into this habit of a buffer period after the end of year until the next year. And what they did, they divided this buffer period into two periods or two semi-periods. One was named Janus and the other was named Februa. Now, they both were pseudo-months, not full-fledged months, signifying that the year would end soon, it's time for a change, which is also represented by the fact that Janus, the god Janus, is double-headed. So it is sort of saying that Janus can see into the future and into the past, so into the present and into the past at the same time. And the fact that the year sort of starts with Janus, it kind of made sense. And he's also the Roman god of doorways, beginnings and change. So what happened in around 450 BC, someone decided to make Janus and Februa the first and second months of the year.
All right.
Because as I said, Janus was supposed to be the god of beginnings. So they were like, you know what? Since we already have this month after Janus, let's just start the year with this. Are you following so far?
Yep.
Now, because of this, first, there was this buffer period. Then they made this buffer period as January, February, which of course became January, February. Because of these 2 months, then they decided, you know what? Let's just start with the buffer period itself. So they started with January. Because of all of this, something changed. Something became not quite right as it was earlier. Let me just give you this much hint right now. Let's see, what do you have to make? Because they added 2 months in the calendar before the spring, January and February, something changed in the calendar. Something wasn't quite right. You have to tell me what happened when they added these 2 months.
So you said that they had 10 months earlier?
Yes.
And then over time, they said, okay, let's have a buffer period. Then let's have divide that buffer period into two. Let's call those after Janus and Februa. I'm assuming because of that, then they had the complete 12 months of the year. And so if we're talking about the 12 months of the year, then they shifted from counting system or a number system with the base 10 to the dozenal or the dodecagonal system with the base 12.
I thought you were on the right track, but somewhere I think you might have deviated. Go on.
I'm assuming that at a similar level, the hours of the day were also divided only in multiples of 10 and or in totally 10 hours, and then they made that 12.
Oh, no. Come back.
Okay.
You almost had the answer there somewhere, but you deviated to a different tangent. So 10-month period, 10 months in a year and a buffer period. Slowly, the buffer period also became months and we had a 12-month year, which we know to this day also. But because of this, something changed.
So you're saying that there was something that came about because of this. Is the origin of some practice or some nomenclature?
Sort of. Yes. That's a very apt word to use.
So what could it be? It could be...
You're at a point where I don't think I can give you any hint without revealing the answer. So you're that close. Yes.
I can see the answer. It's there, but to reach for it, it's just out of grasp. Can you just repeat the sequence again? There were...
So 10 months in a year.
Yeah.
Starting with spring, just like everyone else starts with spring. then what they did was they added a buffer period, which was of around 50 days, because each month was 30-31 as we have today. But of course, because they had 10 months, so there was a, like, there was nothing for 2 months, which was basically winters. And they said winter is a monthless season.
Yeah.
And with time, people started calling this buffer period also into months, and they eventually became months. And now, because they had named this buffer period after Janus, I'm assuming, and Janus was the god of beginnings. So they said, you know what, let's just start with Janus's month. And after that, the calendar took shape as we know it today, basically. A 12-month calendar starting with Janus's month, January. Now, because they moved the calendar from spring to January and made it a 12-month thing, some things changed in the calendar. Something about the calendar was quite off, and it is off even till this date.
Oh, is this like a leap year that was introduced?
No.
As in, like, you have to have the 365 days in the year, but they didn't have those 365 days. They had only like 30 or 31 into 10, and so 300 days plus, then you said that they added 50 odd days there. So
yeah,
that still doesn't account for 365.
I'm not sure how they calculated the leap year thing, to be honest, at this moment. I'm not really aware of it.
Is this the story of why February has 28 days?
No, not even that. You were on the right track with the nomenclature bit.
With the nomenclature. So then, is this like the definition of month? Like, the word month means 12?
No.
In some way? No, it doesn't.
No.
Is it a word itself that I'm looking for?
Yes. Four, in fact. Four words.
SPQR is the Roman... I don't know the full form, but it's the Roman motif.
What is that? Like a quota forms of sorts?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. It's to do with that. Should I give out the answer?
Sure. Yeah, I really don't have a better guess right now.
We'll make you get to the answer. So, if there are 2 points and something connects the 2 points, it's a line. If there are 3 points, what do we call it?
The triangle.
Then go on. For 4, quadrangle. For 5?
The pentagon. Hexagon, septagon, octagon.
One second. What? Septagon. Octagon.
Heptagon, then octagon.
Okay.
Then nonagon, then decagon.
Okay, so there are these Latin prefixes in front, right?
Deca. Yeah, December, it becomes 10. Oh, so December is 10, but it's actually the 12th month.
12th month of the year. November is the 9th month, but it is the 11th month. September becomes from 7th to 9th. And October, Octopus, it is supposed to be the 8th month, but it became the 10th month of the year. And all of this happened because they added January and February in between the calendar.
Oh, I am hitting myself right now. This is staring right in the face.
The 5th month was called Quintilis.
Yeah.
But then came Julius. And the 6th month was called Sextilis. And then came Caesar Augustus. And he took over that.
Yeah.
So Julius Caesar Augustus took July and August. And after that, they just took September, October, November, December and pushed them forward by 2 months. And hence, the calendar just went loco of sorts.
Oh, man.
Which is why December is the 12th month and not the 10th month. So that was the basic idea of it. Also, as I said, this was BC. This was before Christ. So Jesus wasn't born yet. So the Romans, when they were calculating, I mean, even in the early days of Christ or basically before Christ, so the Romans had their own way of calculating what year it was.
Yeah.
So there had to be some reference point, right? And since Jesus wasn't born, so what Romans did, instead of using BC, they used AUC, which is roughly translates to, well, it says ab urbi condita, which means from the founding of the city. So the Romans calculated the year from the year in which Rome was founded. So they just meant if it's 100, that means 100 years since Rome was founded. And yeah, that was the story of the Roman calendar. Well done on that.
Yeah.
You were there.
This is a superb question. And yeah, I really wish I'd cracked it.
And this is something that we know ever since we were children, like September, October, November, December, right? We all know the months and those October, Oct the prefixes are right there. I mean, we have studied all of this in school and whatnot, but somehow I never made the correlation that October is not the 8th month, it's the 10th month of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so now it's your turn to ask me a question.
All right. So, you know, because you made me do some math,
yes,
I will ask you a question from a math quiz which I hosted.
Lovely.
And the way that I think about quizzes, I don't say that, okay, if we have a math quiz, we're only going to ask mathematical problems. It's anything that mathematics has contributed to or has been derived from that field.
Fair enough.
So I'm talking about 1956. I'm talking about a chemist named Frederick J. Bauer. And his task was to fix consumer complaints of broken, oily, and stale products. So he spent 2 years developing a consistent shape for this particular product, as well as the container in which the product fits. And then a chap named Gene Wolfe, who you might or might not have heard of. Gene Wolfe is a mechanical engineer and he was also a sci-fi author. He wrote a bunch of sci-fi books. He developed the machine that manufactured these products. Now, the product itself has a very consistent shape. That shape is mathematically known as a hyperbolic paraboloid. You studied math, then you have some idea of what a parabola and a hyperbola are. And so this shape is a combination of a hyperbola and a parabola called a hyperbolic paraboloid. So the designers reportedly used a bunch of supercomputers to ensure that the aerodynamics would keep these products in place while they were being packaged, and that they would not break when they were stacked on top of each other. So what product am I talking about that was designed by Frederick J. Bauer?
Please tell me something. What's Frederick J. Bauer, you mentioned, right? Frederick J. Bauer.
Yeah, yeah.
Was he buried in the same product?
Was he buried in the same product? That is, I know exactly what you mean.
In the box? Was he cremated in the same box that he created? I think so.
Interesting story there. And I was going to bring that up in as a follow-up fact. But now that you've said it, yes, he was in fact not buried. He was cremated and his ashes were stored in the same box of the product that he designed.
And he came up with the Pringles can.
He came up with the shape of the Pringle chip or the wafer as well as the can.
You know what? I think this question, to be totally honest, I think someone asked me this quite recently. And it may have traveled since you put it in your thing. Also, what is it? Parabolic hyperboloid, is it?
Hyperbolic paraboloid.
Oh, it's the other way around. I think that is quite a famous story, but I didn't know the other bits of it. But someone did ask me this question quite recently and I went under the rabbit hole. And that is where I came to know that this person had, one of his last wishes was that he be, as you said, his remains be put in a Pringles can. And I think his kids were not sure which can he would have wanted, which flavored can, but then they went with the original, I think.
Exactly, they picked the classic one because they're like, that's the one that he invented. His daughter actually said that they'll do it.
Well done. And on that note, if you enjoyed today's episode, do remember that you can contribute to help this podcast grow. All you have to do is get on to instamojo.com/@studio41 or paypal.me/studio41pod and contribute whatever amount you like. The links are in the description. But there is one tiny thing that is still left to be done, and that is the audience question. So, Yogesh, what you have to do is ask one question to our audience members. And these audience members, what they can do is they can listen to the question. And if they think they know the answer to the question or they have a educated guess, they can get in touch with us over social media and tell us what they think is the answer. And how they get in touch with us is over Facebook or Instagram. We are @QuizTimeIndia. Or they can also get in touch with us on social media, which is our Studio 41 account. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, @PodcastStudio41. Also now on Clubhouse. So Clubhouse is open for everyone. So they can also, Clubhouse has DM functionality. So you guys can also DM @Studio41 on Clubhouse. So Yogesh, over to you. please tell us, what is the audience question?
Right. So I'm going to talk about a crowd favorite here. And it's a relatively simple question, so expect lots of replies coming. So Pounamu, P-O-U-N-A-M-U, are several types of hard and durable stones which are found in New Zealand mainly. So geologically, they're made of nephrite jade and are green in color. Okay, so they play an important role in the local culture, and they're carved basically into blades called adze, which are made for carving wood, or chisels, which are called wao, W-H-A-O, or pendants or amulets called haitiki, or fishing hooks called matao, and many, many other tools similar to that. My question is, which Oscar-nominated movie had a Pounamu amulet at the heart of its story? Which Oscar-nominated movie had this Pounamu amulet at the heart of its story?
All right, so as I mentioned earlier, you can send the answers over social media and we will pick one person who had given the correct answer. So Yogesh, thank you so much for this. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I had last and thank you so much. Before you go, please tell us, how can we follow your quizzes? How can the audience get in touch? And where do you quiz usually? And basically all that stuff.
Thank you so much for having me, Aditya. It's an absolute pleasure and I absolutely loved the questions and this banter and the trivia that followed. It was a lot of fun. So I run a quiz called Quiz Pro Quo. You can follow us on Instagram. That's at Quiz Pro Quo. We're also on Facebook, but not as active out there. Just follow us there and you can find us there. You can follow me personally. My Instagram handle is Yoto Uno, but I'm not really a very active person there. Thank you again, Aditya. This was so much fun and I'm so happy that you're doing this, and good luck with Quiz Time India. Hopefully you do wonders, and really, really happy that you're spreading the word of quizzing so far and so wide.
Let's hope we get to do this more often.
Absolutely.
All right. That brings us to the end of the episode. The podcast was hosted and produced by me, Aditya, and the questions were researched and said by Anisha, Keshav, Rishabh, Madhavan, Vinayak, and Ananda. This episode was edited by Pranjal Gupta. Major credit to them all. Remember, you as an audience can support us by contributing to the podcast. You can donate to keep the show running. You can go to www.instamojo.com/@studio41, or you can go to www.paypal.me/studio41pod. Contribute whatever amount you like, no amount is less, and every penny counts. The links are in the description. And if in case you cannot donate but you want to help out, you can definitely share this podcast with your friends and family. Put it up on social media. That would be a big help. That will be all for today. Thank you for your time. You can thank me for mine. Goodbye.